Hello, kids, and welcome to the Doggone Podcast, show number 11. Fair warning, we are talking about Auburn, so yeah, there's profanity.
South Carolina in a 5-3, and they run a trap with Herschel Walker, got a hole by 10! 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50. There goes Herschel. There goes Herschel. Suddenly, 76 yards. Herschel Walker scores. Hole at the right tackle. Man, did he turn it on when he had to. Suddenly. 9-0 in the Dogs lead, and the stadium trembles and cracks a little bit.
Hello, kids, and welcome to the Doggone Podcast, show number 11. I am your host, Kit Kitchens. I have woken up on this very early Tuesday morning to get this part of the podcast recorded so that I could go ahead and get it online for you guys. I'm also one of the writers for the Doggone Blog. You can find us at www.doggoneblog.com. You can also email us anytime at doggoneblog@gmail.com. It's dawggoneblog@gmail.com. There's not much to say about the podcast today other than the conversation that Kyle King with Dog Sports and I had was just fantastic. It was so good that honestly, as soon as it was over, I was like, I've got to get this show online as soon as possible so that the folks can hear it. So I'm not going to waste your time with a big long-winded intro. I'm just going to go ahead and jump right into it, and then I'm going to close the show out just because, yeah, I mean, Kyle was on fire this week, and so I'm happy to bring it to you. But enjoy the conversation with Kyle King, and we'll be back next week with the show before Georgia Tech. All right, you're listening to the Doggone Podcast, and we are talking with the man who now is the king of hating Auburn, because he hated them before, and there's no doubt in my mind he really can't stand them now. Kyle King with Dog Sports. Kyle, how are you, man?
I'm doing okay. How about you?
I'm pissed. I'm not going to lie. I'm still mad. You know, I mean, let's just dive right into it. Okay, we'll get into the aspects of the game. You know, and what we did to lose on the football field in a minute. But what did you take away from Auburn and their school, their administration, their coaches, everything as a whole this weekend?
Well, you know, it's always interesting to me. Every so often, people, usually younger Georgia fans who think of, quite understandably, Florida as the big rival, who always ask me, why do you hate Auburn so badly? I mean, I'll get that question all the time. And I try and explain it to people, but honestly, I usually just have to wait until November, and what I've got to learn to tell people is, ask me that question in mid-November. Wait till after the game's over, and you tell me if you don't know. And usually, while this is a pretty egregious example of it, usually you get to find out, and people go, man, now I understand. I mean, yeah, obviously, I was fired up about it, just as I'm sure you were. I was furious about it, but when I had a little time to cool down, what I realized was, they've always been this way. You know, I'm irate over Nick Fairley, and before him I was irate over Ryan Pugh, and before him I was irate over Junior Rose Green, and before that I was irate over them getting flagged for chop blocks all the time. I mean, with Cam Newton and the allegations there, if, as appears probably more likely than not, there's going to be a declaration of ineligibility. And like, oh my gosh, Auburn may get hammered by the NCAA while they're going undefeated. Well, they went undefeated in 1957 and they were on probation under Shug Jordan. They went undefeated in 1993 when they were on probation under Terry Bowden after Pat Dye got done with them. When they went undefeated in 2004, their football program wasn't on probation, but 6 months earlier, their basketball program had been put on probation. I mean, this is Auburn football. It's what they do. They're nasty, they're dirty, they're cheaters, and they always have been, and they always will be, and that's why I hate Auburn.
You know what? I can't disagree with you, man. I had always had this little healthy respect for Auburn because I had a very close friend of mine from my high school days, Dontarius Thomas, played linebacker for Auburn, played right next to Carlos Dansby. And it was great to see him play, and I always rooted for him to do well. And because of his affiliation with Auburn, it ended up being something to where I was rooting for my buddy, but he just happened to be on a rival team, and I was okay with that. And for the most part, we have kind of owned Auburn's butt in the Mark Richt era, excluding 2004, where we got it handed to us, 2001, and the infamous, you know, if Mark Richt's going to win in the SEC, he's got to learn, he's going to have to run the football.
Right.
And this year, you know, we were sitting here, and we had been playing good. We beat the crap out of them when they were riding high in 2006. And I looked at Auburn like Florida kind of looks at us, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I had totally dismissed them. But what I saw on Saturday, I was not mad that we lost that game because, you know, Auburn's a pretty doggone good football team. Their defense is abysmal. But, you know, Nick Fairley, if he were to play clean, he'd still be one of the best defensive players in college football.
Absolutely.
And Cam Newton is a great college football player. But what really pisses me off is not the fact that we lost. It's the manner in which they won the game.
Sure.
And that just had the fist pumping by Chizik, the high fives after the fight by Trooper Taylor. This is a school, a program, an administration, and a fan base that has absolutely taken both their middle fingers, flung them up in the air, and said, NCAA, SEC, and everybody else that wants to be against us, we don't care.
Yep.
We're going to play who we want to play, and if you sanction us, to us, we have won. It's almost like in 2004 when they bought the rings. You know,
right.
Like they're recognizing something that in the end will not exist, and it just pisses me off.
Yeah, well, it does me too. And again, I think there's a combination of factors. I mean, again, the fact is they have been put on probation more times than any other SEC school, which again is an astounding achievement when you consider the history of the SEC. I mean, there literally was a period of time in there when Mike Slide became the commissioner. That was one of his goals was, we want all 12 schools to be off probation at the same time. That shouldn't have to be one of your goals, but that was, in fact, a stated goal. And so the fact that they have rung up this series of violations under a series of coaches, I mean, it's not like us with our basketball program. Yeah, we got on probation under Jim Herrick. You know what? Jim Herrick was a dirty coach everywhere he ever coached. Aside from Jim Herrick, we run a clean basketball program. You know, that's an exceptional era in Georgia basketball. Auburn's cheated under everybody. They've been getting into trouble under any variety of coaches. And so I think there's just that aspect of that's just how they've always succeeded, and so they're accustomed to it. And like you say, it's sort of this middle finger to the rest of the NCAA. And I think the flip side of that is they have got, even more so than, say, a Michigan State or even a Georgia Tech or a Texas A&M, they've got the little brother syndrome bad. I mean, they're in the state with Alabama, which has got the greatest tradition in the SEC, one of the greatest traditions, if not the greatest tradition, in college football. You know, they claim all these national titles. They have all this success. And let's be honest, you know, I love Bear Bryant as much as anybody else, but when you look at the Bear Bryant coaching tree and you see the, you know, the Jackie Sherrills and the Danny Fords and the Charlie Pels, for Bear Bryant to have been clean, a whole bunch of his disciples wound up getting programs in trouble, you know? And so I think the Auburn people feel like, hey, Bryant did all this stuff too, but he just got away with it. And again, I think it just fuels that whole conspiracy theory mentality that, hey, everybody's out to get us, so we're going to get ours any way we can. And you know, if this story came out about a Georgia player, you know, if you told me that A.J. Green, I mean, heck, I was mad about $1,000 for a jersey. If you told me that A.J. Green, you know, he was calling around and his dad was calling around saying it's going to cost $200,000 to sign him, I'd be appalled. And yet, I think they're just willing to take this and run with it and say, "Hey, we're 11-0." Before they bust us on it, we're going to be 14-0. We're gonna have that moment of hoisting the crystal football, and nobody's going to be able to take that away from us. Even if they literally take the trophy away from us, we've got that moment. And I think they're setting themselves up for Cam Newton being their Maurice Claret. I think a year from now, we're going to love Cam Newton, and they're going to hate his guts. And we're going to throw the name Cam Newton in their face when they come into Athens, and they're going to spit on the ground. But they're going to claim the national title.
Yeah, I mean, I you know what, though? I don't even know if they will ever hate Cam Newton, because if they were to hate Cam Newton, now's the time to do it. Now's the time, PR-wise, to stand in front and say, you know what, this isn't the way we do things, you know, and they are absolutely – They're not doing that. I mean, I think when we say Cam Newton, they're going to say, "Oh, everybody pays players, and you know it." That's what they're going to say.
You may be right. You may be right about that. It really depends on whether it just is an ineligibility issue that causes them to vacate wins in the record book, or whether they find. And at this point, nobody's found anything. You know, it's a question of, was Cam Newton ineligible because his dad asked for money from Mississippi State, or did somebody for Auburn pony up some money? And at this point, again, there's allegations and rumors, but there's nothing that even vaguely resembles proof. And so I think it's a question of, are they just going to have vacated wins in the record book, in which case you're right, what do they care? They want them on the field and everybody knows that. Or is it going to be something that's going to cause them scholarship limitations, bowl bans, probation, all that kind of stuff? And I, you know, don't think that the Auburn faithful aren't aware of when that 5-year probationary period from their April 2004 probation ended. You know, they were on 5 years probation. As long as none of this stretches back to April 2009, and there's no reason to think that any of it does, they're not going to be hit with the repeat offender status, and so they're probably going to be treated, you know, like just a regular bunch of cheaters instead of an extraordinary bunch of cheaters. So,
you know, I've got this mindset, and maybe I have just kind of hyped my own self up by doing so much reading on this Cam Newton thing, because I've tried to understand what exactly is the issue. We know there's an eligibility issue. Even if Auburn didn't do anything wrong, specifically the school in and of itself, there could be an eligibility issue with Cam if Cecil did ask for money from Mississippi State, which it looks like at this point, that's almost a guarantee.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It looks like at this point, that's almost a guarantee. So it looks like there will be an eligibility issue. But I am of the mindset that the NCAA has basically shot a nice little shot across the bow of Auburn and said, "Hey guys, I think you might have a problem on your hands. NCAA rules suggest that it is up to the school whether or not to suspend a player. We don't make that determination." And I think indirectly they're saying, "Auburn, we're coming after you. Now's a good time to be a little proactive like everybody else, or we're going to hammer your ass." You know,
right
now, I think that Auburn said, "You know what? We don't care." And so the NCAA has allowed, you know, it's like our good friend Paul Westerdog said, there's only a handful of people you don't want to see in your front yard. One of them is the FBI.
Yeah,
you
that's
know?
Right. That's
and,
right.
And the NCAA at this point is going to let the FBI do all that heavy lifting and do that subpoena of the records and everything like that to see if there's an issue to go after Cecil Newton. And in the meantime, if the NCAA finds that Auburn did buy anything, I don't care if they bought him a Dunkin' Donut. If they bought anything for Cam Newton to get him to come to Auburn, which, by the way, it's worth mentioning, Cam Newton never visited Auburn before he committed, FYI, for anybody who didn't know. But if they did buy anything, I think they're going to hammer them harder than they hammered USC.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a possibility. And again, the interesting thing is you've now got two lines of demarcation. You've got the line of demarcation that dates back to, depending on where you want to figure it, you know, January when Mississippi State reported this, or July when they actually began the investigation. But, you know, something that dates back to before the season. Auburn was aware that this was hanging out there and played him. And then you've got the other line of demarcation, which is the end of last week when, as you say, the NCAA said to Auburn, "Hey, we're officially putting you on notice. There's an eligibility issue relating to Cam Newton," which, of course, happened to be a day or two before the Georgia game. So there's a possibility you could see some different treatment of the first part of the season, the first 10 games, where they didn't, in the official sense, know there was an eligibility issue, even though they were aware there was an investigation. And then you got that line that starts right before the Georgia game, and you're talking Georgia-Alabama SEC Championship bowl game, where those games are going to occur with Auburn being formally, officially on notice. And does that get treated differently? And again, you know, we've seen, and I think this is bogus, and I think it's nonsense, but, you know, we've seen a tendency for the NCAA recently to vacate wins, which to me is just stupid. They just erase them from the record book. It's like they never happened. And I think there's all kinds of problems with that. And to me, it's very simple. If you're going to say this team won because they fielded an ineligible athlete, I think you forfeit the game. I mean, you basically cheated during the game, and so the other team ought to get the W. You don't erase it from the record book. And I think it's particularly true of a game like this one where, and again, I take nothing away from Auburn, who played a great game. Obviously take nothing away from Cam Newton. But if Cam Newton had not been on the field last Saturday, the Auburn Tigers would not have won that football game. So if Cam Newton was not eligible at the time he took the field, I got no problem with saying they ought to have to forfeit the game, because you and I both know if Cam Newton hadn't been there, Auburn wouldn't have had the win to forfeit.
Yeah, and, you know, here's the thing. Georgia almost beat Auburn. We sure as hell had them on the ropes. That's sure. Why they onside kicked in the second half, because they didn't want Georgia getting the ball. You
right.
know, that wasn't a pile it on, put the gas on, try to extend the lead they already had. Auburn did not want Georgia to take the lead in the second half, because they knew if they could find a way to go ahead, they probably would go ahead and win the game.
Right.
And so, you know, they know that they are beatable, and you know, there's some defensive issues that I think, you know, kept us from winning the game, obviously, but Cam Newton's a wonderful player. There's no doubt about that. He's a good football player. But I think I'm really glad that you brought up the NCAA thing, because I agree with you. If the NCAA really wanted to do this correctly, what they could do is they could sit back and say, we know that there's an eligibility issue, so we're going to go ahead and rule on the fact that Cam Newton is ineligible and he
right.
is now held out of contests. Okay,
right.
And at that point, you don't have to finish your entire investigation, find out if Auburn paid him or anything like that. Once you determine he's ineligible, yank him out of there. Not vacate the wins, forfeit the wins, put somebody else in the SEC championship game, and I guarantee you next time somebody's going to sit back and say, hey, wait a minute, I don't know if we should do the things that we're thinking about doing.
Right, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, and that's the thing. You got to have consequences to it. I mean, the first time Auburn went undefeated while on probation, they won the AP National Championship. They weren't able to compete for an NCAA title in other sports, but because that's handled by the polls, and you know, as they've tried to highlight with this whole FBS and FCS nonsense for 1A and 1AA, that's not an official NCAA championship. So you can finish number one in the AP poll. Coaches won't rank you if you're on probation. But, you know, they actually claimed a national title while on probation. And I think you really just, you know, you have to look at it from that mindset. And I think a lot of schools, most schools, I would hope, don't really have that mindset. You know, there's this sense of, hey, you need to at least be making an effort to do it the right way. I'm not saying anybody is squeaky clean. I don't think anybody is squeaky clean, and we certainly have made our mistakes in the past. But there's a line you don't cross, and that line is somewhere in the neighborhood of SMU saying, you know what, to hell with it. We're just straight up buying guys.
Yeah.
You know, the line you don't cross is Albert Means being on the chopping block and his high school coach calling around and basically auctioning him off and saying, look, I'm like a father to this guy. He'll go where I tell him to go. What are you willing to pay me to get him to sign on the dotted line for you? And that just, you know, the level of exploitation that is involved there just takes it to a different level. I mean, I'm not defending the Cadillac Escalades in the parking lot. That's a violation too. But there, it's at least on a somewhat different level, because you're getting a little bit of benefit to the guy, even if it's an improper benefit, where he's making a business decision. You and I both wish it was not a business decision. To some of these guys, it is, and that's bad enough. But when you're at the point where guys are actually, I mean, essentially just buying these kids, and you know, that's just a disturbing idea. I mean, never mind the idea of amateur status, never mind the idea of the student athlete. You're just essentially purchasing this person's services, and oftentimes paying the money to someone other than the kid. And I just, you know, again, I don't know the facts behind this. I don't know that Cecil Newton or Cam Newton did anything like what they're accused of doing, so I'm not going to point the finger at Cecil Newton and say, oh, you did this. I don't know that he did. But if these allegations are true, if you're talking about a father calling a school and saying, my son will play for you if you cut me a check for $200,000, that's despicable.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. Absolutely. I mean, Cecil Newton's actions, and like we said earlier, I think it's going to come to light that Cecil Newton did everything that he's been accused of doing so far, you know, and no one has said that he made the same deal to Auburn. They just say that he made it to Mississippi State. And if that happened, I mean, how could you betray your own son like that? I mean, right. I could understand maybe a coach. I mean, I don't understand it, but I could see it happening. But your own son, I mean,
sure,
the end-all be-all, and I said this in the podcast last week, it's going to look more and more like Cam Newton was more of a pawn in this whole thing than actually one of the cooperating parties. You know, it was obvious he wanted to go to Mississippi State. He loved Mullen. Mullen loved him. They got along right from the days at Florida. But, you know, Cam Newton calls up Mullen, supposedly, allegedly, and says the money at Auburn was too much, I can't come, and he's emotional about it. That ought to tell you right there that this kid has been taken advantage of. And I don't like Cam Newton. I will make that obvious right now. The whole blowing kisses to the crowd, the smiling after the first downs and stuff like that. First of all, let me tell you who smiles after they get hit and after first downs. Hines Ward. Okay, so you ain't the first one to do it. So don't start that crap. You know, but you know, the entire Cam Newton, you know, woe is me, jumping into the student section like he's been exalted. Get over it. Tebow did it, but Tebow walked the walk. You know, Cam Newton, don't be giving this, you know, if the devil be messing, you know, God be blessing kind of crap, whatever he said last week or whatever.
Right.
But, you know, it's ridiculous. But, you know, I think that we're on the same page here that there is a good opportunity here for a lot of things to happen. For one, and first and foremost, the NCAA could make a statement in a number of ways, and that is make a statement to the school by not vacating the wins, by forfeiting those games, putting someone else in the SEC championship, someone else in the national title, something like that. And two, by getting the FBI involved, you're getting other people, excuse me, to do the heavy lifting and say, not only are we going to go after the school, but you guilty parties that made this happen, we're coming after you too. And that's going to help a lot in the future. The NCAA is a real chance to do something right here, and I hope they do. But moving on to another guy away from Cam Newton, Nick Fairley.
Yeah.
Now, I know that you have an opinion on Nick Fairley. Everybody's got one at this point. What do you think about the way he played on Saturday?
Well, I don't think there's any way to excuse it. I don't think there's any defense for it. And, again, I want to be real clear here. 21 of the 22 starters for the Auburn Tigers played the football game the way it's supposed to be played. Whether they were all eligible, whether there was anything else going on off the field, those guys on the field played the game of football the way it's supposed to be played, and I have no quarrel with any of them. But I don't think there's any possible way you can defend Nick Fairley because of the number of times that he did that. I mean, even before we got to the late game annex, there were several times just watching the game where you go, that's kind of borderline. I mean, at best, that's borderline. And then as the game wore on, and, you know, the one where Murray has thrown the pass, he's done throwing the pass. I mean, he's out there. He is standing there. He is no longer a part of this football play.
Oh, he's relaxed.
He is no longer a participant in this game. And he's totally blindsided. And Fairley just builds up a head of steam and sticks his helmet into his back. I mean, that can paralyze a guy. You know, we're not just talking about taking a cheap shot at a guy when you got him on the ground. We're talking about legitimately dangerous stuff that can not only end the guy's football career, it can change his life. I mean, that's bad. That's dirty, nasty stuff. And, you know, the only thing that I can compare it to is the Junior Rose Green helmet-to-helmet shot on Reggie Brown in 2004, where when I saw that hit happen, I, honest to God, looking at it, thought, oh, my God, I don't think Reggie Brown's ever going to walk again. I mean, it was not just a, oh, gee, we're going to lose the football game. It was, this guy may be seriously, legitimately hurt in a life-altering way. And you can't tell me when you've done that and been flagged for it and been doing it all game And then when you're going after a guy's knees and you're being blocked out and you still keep going so you can drill a guy's knee and knock him out of there, there's no way to say that's not deliberate. There's no way to say that's defensible. There's no way to defend not ejecting him from the game. There's no way to defend as a coach not yanking him from the game. And again, that last one occurred after the game was no longer in doubt. You know, I don't defend trying to knock an opposing quarterback out of the game even when it remains in doubt. And I'd like to point out again, if Cam Newton hadn't played, we'd have won that game. I would not defend a Georgia defender attempting to knock him out, even though that probably would have changed the outcome, because that's not how you play the game of football. It's not within the rules. And beyond that, it's just the wrong thing to do. And there's some things you got to say are wrong just because, damn it, they're wrong. Nick Fairley's a bad dude. He should never set foot on a football field again. If he was an NFL player, he would not be playing next week. He'd be paying a $50,000 fine. And the fact that Gene Chizik didn't yank him out of there proves to me that everything I've thought about Auburn being a bunch of cheating sons of bitches is 100% true.
Yep, and you know what? I think I could not agree with you more. I mean, I just, when I was sitting there and I was looking at Nick Fairley, there's a big difference, and everybody who knows anything about football, whether you've played it or whether you're just a student of the game, anybody that has just any sense about them knows that there's a big difference between hurting a guy or making a guy hurt and injuring somebody.
Right.
And what
right.
Nick Fairley was trying to do was injure someone. He was right. going after the way they walk, both in head, in neck-related things, but by the spine and driving him into the ground and stuff like that and going after his knees. Nick Fairley was trying to not knock Aaron Murray out of the game by hurting him. He was trying to injure him. He was doing everything he could to tear his ACL, to give him a concussion, to tear a shoulder, to do something like that. And you know what? It's indefensible. The people who I think in order that deserve blame for this is, one, Nick Fairley, because he
sure.
did it. Two, Gene Chizik, because he allowed it to happen. And three, the referees who never had control of this damn game. They
right.
never,
right.
not one second. There's one thing between letting the guys play, but as soon
right.
as Cam Newton threw that punch at Bakari Rambo that looked like a
yeah.
half-assed stiff arm but was really just a punch,
yeah,
they should
sure.
have flagged him and told him right there. If they didn't eject his ass at that moment, they should have told him right there, you do it one more time and you're definitely gone. I don't give a damn how much they paid you to play today.
Right.
You know,
right.
and they got into this way too late. And kudos to Mark Richt, of all people, for when our guys stood up and ran right at Nick Fairley and then went and basically stood up to Auburn. And, yeah, the skirmish broke out. Mark Richt was in the ref's ear, and basically what he told them, because you could read his lips, was this
yeah.
is what happens when you don't throw the flag. So
yeah,
kudos
right.
to Mark
that's
Richt.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. What it reminded me of was in 1996 when Florida lost to Florida State in the regular season finale. And Steve Spurrier accused Florida State, probably correctly, of some late hits on Danny Werfel. And as they were getting ready for the rematch in the Sugar Bowl for the national championship, Spurrier made the comment that Danny Werfel was a New Testament kind of guy who believed in turning the other cheek. And Spurrier said, I'm more of an Old Testament guy. I believe that if you spear our guy in the ear, we're going to spear your guy in the ear. And I hate having to think that way, but you got to act in self-defense. You know, I mean, there's a point at which when a guy has made it known, my objective out here is to end your quarterback's football career. My goal here is not to win the football game. My goal here is not to tackle this guy and get a sack. My goal here is not to break your will to fight back in this game. I want this guy injured. I'm willing to do things that are legitimately dangerous, that threaten his future health and well-being, and I dare you to stop me. And at that point, you got a decision to make. And you're right. It's a shame that you don't have a coach on the opposite sideline who's willing to rein that in rather than stand there and pump his fist in the air. And you don't have a guy, you know, Trooper Taylor going out there. And I'll give Taylor credit. I think he was probably trying to calm him down by taking an easygoing approach. But the way it came across to Nick Fairley is that Trooper Taylor was congratulating him on his dirty play, and he felt moved to go and make obscene gestures to the crowd and high-five his coach. when what Mark Richt would have done, and we know it because we've seen it, we saw it in Vanderbilt in 2007,
yep.
Mark Richt would have gotten out there, grabbed the guy's jersey, and said, get off the field, you're embarrassing yourself. I mean, you saw how he lit into Tavares King on an offsetting foul that Georgia didn't lose any yardage on. You know, I mean, he is, for all the criticism that he gets for off-season arrests for stupid offenses, he's real clear and direct about telling people what the expectations are. You know, we got flagged for one chop block. That's one. That's not a pattern. Nick Fairley going out there and taking shot after shot after shot after shot, that's a pattern. And if it's not going to be dealt with, you got to deal with it yourself. I hate that. I don't like that vigilante mindset. But if the law enforcement officials aren't going to do their job, your choices are vigilanteism or getting killed.
Yep. And you know, the thing that I think drives me most crazy about the whole Auburn mess and the fans, if they want to support Newton, fine, support Newton. Do whatever you want to do. I don't care. But if it were Georgia, I would think that there would be at least one person out there that would say, you know what? I don't condone what happened. I don't condone a single thing that happened. But I have yet to see or read anything from an Auburn fan that said anything about Nick Fairley's play. Anything.
Well, I'll give him credit. I've gotten a few commenters who have come by my site, who have been Auburn fans, who have said that. They have justified some other stuff, but they have not attempted, and they've been very clear. A few of them have said, look, what Nick Fairley was doing was not right, and he should have been yanked from that game. So it's not all of them, and I don't want to try and portray them as completely a batch of rotten apples. So there have been a few, but yeah, you're right. There's not been enough of that, and certainly there's been a lot of stuff out in the blogosphere from guys who aren't Georgia fans or Auburn fans saying, hey, look at this video. This video speaks for itself. You know, Sports by Brooks was writing about it, and we've seen it. Some of the other guys, Wizard of Odds, you know, guys who don't have a dog in this fight have been real clear. Chris Lowe even came out and said, hey, this ain't right. And this is the SEC reporter who you'd think would want to be on good terms with everybody and wouldn't want to call anybody out. So it's not just us. And a few Auburn fans have stepped forward, but yeah, you're right. There needs to be more of that, because even if you think Cam Newton's innocent, and even if you think the NCAA is overbearing, and even if you think all this is rumor and innuendo and it's all smoke with no fire, all that's reasonable, even though I disagree with it. There is no defense for attempting to injure someone. Same way, you know, we're hearing about this fire that was set in Toomer's Corner. I don't know who did it. If a Georgia fan went and set that on fire, that guy needs to be arrested and that guy needs to be prosecuted, because what he did, although it didn't cause any real damage, very easily could have caused serious damage to life and limb. And you just can't tolerate that, period.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I've actually got into it pretty fiercely on Bleacher Report, of all places, because this guy, a friend of mine pointed it out to me on Facebook. He goes, hey, look at this ridiculous crap. And so, you know, Georgia fans, you know, have said the Toomer's Corner thing, that's ridiculous. That's absolutely absurd. And just like you said, you could have seriously hurt somebody. Hope the guy gets found out. Hope they prosecute him to the full extent of the law. But I got into it with the guy on Bleacher Report, because he says, you know, witnesses at the scene say that a Georgia fan set the blaze, was celebrating, then he got beat up by a bunch of Auburn fans, and then Auburn police took him off. Well, it's come to light that no arrests have been made. Nobody knows right for sure who's done it. So to the guy who wrote the Bleacher Report article, you can still kiss my butt. I'm still right, so I don't care.
But last thing I'd read said, yeah, exactly that the police were not indicating who the suspects were. There were witnesses that said it was a Georgia fan. Wouldn't surprise me if it was. It did occur at 2:30 in the morning, so I'd be willing to bet cash money that A, the perpetrator, and B, the witnesses had been doing some drinking. I'm just going to go out on a limb there and say 2:30 in the morning following an SEC football game, there might have been some alcohol involved. Again, that doesn't excuse what the person who did it did. He ought to be arrested. He ought to be prosecuted. But it does sort of call into question the judgment and the memory of probably everyone concerned until I get a report that says, you know, the Auburn police have arrested this guy, and there was an eyewitness, a busload of traveling nuns was going through, and they happened to see the whole thing. Until I hear that, I'm taking everything with a grain of salt.
Yeah, it actually surprises me that you know you say that alcohol may have been involved because obviously throughout our conversation we have determined that Auburn, Alabama is full of monks, nuns, and pastors. So you know that is obvious. There's no doubt about it. There's nothing but peace on the plains. You know, so let's talk a little technical football stuff before I let you go. My view of the game was the offense looked great. I wish Bobo would have kept the gas on a little bit more. I think we basically conceded defeat when we went for the field goal, but I could understand why we did that at that stage in the game. But to me, the determining factor was us not stacking the box and putting it on our secondary in the second half and saying, if you guys blow your assignments, it's going to lead to a touchdown. Don't blow your assignments, but stacking the box because they knew that we were going to run and trying to stop it. Is that a fair assessment on my end, or do you think?
Yeah, I would say so. Again, the problem, as we've talked about several times with Mike Bobo, isn't that he's a bad offensive coordinator. In fact, there are times when he's a very good offensive coordinator. You know, the fourth down call earlier in the game, I thought was a fantastic call. So, I mean, he does that enough to where you have to say, yeah, when he doesn't get inside his own head too much, he does a good job. I just think there's a point where he starts overthinking it and starts outsmarting himself, where he says, you know, according to the scouting report on me, they're expecting me to do this. And I think there's a certain point where you got to quit trying to out-gadget and out-gimmick. You know, how many times did we run that screen pass and they blew it up every time? I mean, it never came close to working. I'm not even talking about, oh, it touched his hands. We didn't get anywhere close to the screen pass working. The wild dog. I don't ever want to see the wild dog again. It has never worked. It is flagrantly obvious exactly what we're doing, and it never accomplishes anything against anybody who's not Northwest Bumble. So I'm tired of him doing that kind of stuff. When we have an identity, when it's pro style, I formation, offense, we do that well when we determine that we're going to do it, and that's what we've looked good at doing. And you're right, we sort of went into a shell when he starts overthinking it and going, I'm going to try this, I'm going to try that, maybe this will catch him off guard. Forget catching him off guard. If you're doing it and it's working, keep doing it until they stop it. I mean, the proudest I've ever been of Mike Bobo as an offensive coordinator was last year against Georgia Tech when we ran the ball, we ran the ball, we ran the ball, we ran the ball. It worked, it worked, it worked, it worked, it worked. And you were like me. In the fourth quarter, you were praying to God he didn't get cute and do something stupid and get away from what was working. And he didn't do it, and we won the game because he didn't do it. And that's what he's got to do consistently. Just be who we are, run what we run, and let them know we don't care what you expect. We don't care what you have determined you think we're going to do, because we're going to do it well enough to make it work whether you know it's coming or not. And that's what we used to do well, and that's what we've got to have the confidence to do again. And on the defensive side, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, you got to get some stops. I mean, on the whole, clearly as a defense, we're way ahead of where we were a year ago. We don't have the personnel to run the system that we want to run, and that's why it's not working as well as we'd like. We don't have the nose tackle that we need. We don't have the personnel in the secondary that we need. When we get those guys, this defense is going to be lights out. I mean, as bad as the record is right now, I feel so much better about the future of this football program from where we were a year ago. This team is playing so much better. I mean, if you took the 2010 Georgia Bulldogs during the open date and put them on the field with the 2009 Georgia Bulldogs, the 2010 Georgia Bulldogs would light them up.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you, man. I think that, you know, it's funny because I don't feel like we're a 5-6 team. You know, I don't know if that's the homer in me. You know, part of the realist and the objective person is saying, dude, don't get ahead of yourself. You're 5-6. You're less than 500. At the best, you'll go into bowl season if you go into bowl season at 500. You know, but when I sit here and I look at it, we don't have a 5-6 offense. You know, we might have a 5-6 defense, but if we can find ways to shore that up, this defense, if this defense was playing at the beginning of the year like they're playing right now, I think you beat Mississippi State.
Yeah.
I think you beat Colorado, and you possibly, you know, win Arkansas. And maybe if Aaron Murray doesn't turn the ball over so much, you beat Florida too. So you're looking at possibly being an 8-win team instead of a 6-6 team, which, you know, that happens. But, you know, I'm just I'm at the point, and I'm like you, some of the calls that Bobo made were absolutely brilliant. I was sitting back, and I was just like, the fourth down touchdown pass to A.J. Green, let me tell you, buddy, I sent out over Twitter, all I could say was balls. Big letters, long L, balls. That's what and that's what it took. And then another beautiful play call is fourth down. We were going for it. Bobo pulls Murray. He pulls the guard and he sends the fullback out. And instead of running up the middle, we ran a quarterback bootleg with blockers out in front. Right. It blew my mind. My head exploded, and all that was left was a unicorn and some confetti. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it was absolutely amazing. And if Bobo can find his groove with that, I think that next year, man, we could really, really be where we need to be. But it is going to take some work in the offseason to do that on a consistent basis. I think that's when that's going to have to be the key there. But
I agree. I mean, as much as we all like seeing Evil Rick, Evil Rick is a luxury. Evil Bobo's a necessity. You know, it's good Bobo is our enemy. Good Bobo's the one that goes, hey, you know, we're not balanced. We need to be more balanced. And so whatever we've been doing more of that obviously has been working better because we've gotten more yards at it, we need to go do the other thing in order to get more yards at that, because our goal is 225 passing yards a game, 225 rushing yards a game. And that's a perfectly fine goal, but you can't let the statistical correlation of, hey, we have a better chance of winning when we do this, you can't let that blind you to what's actually going on in this football game, because no football game is an average football game. If you look at these statistics and you see, on average, Georgia does this, 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 and this, there's no game in which we did exactly those things. They're just averages. They just show tendencies. They just show what's in the middle of the result, and you're not aiming for the middle of the result. You're aiming for the W. And what gets you the W this week may be totally different from what gets you the W next week. And if it's working, keep doing it. And again, I don't want to rag on Bobo too bad, because I think he gets an unfair degree of criticism because he does have his moments. He just then follows them up with some head scratchers, and that's what's so frustrating. It's not like with Willie Martinez, where frankly we were consistently terrible, and it was obvious we needed him to be gone. We needed him to go mess up somebody else's defense. It's not obvious that Mike Bobo needs to be gone, but he does, you're right, need to improve and need to be more consistent. And that's really the story of this team. And again, I don't want to sugarcoat it. We're a legitimate 5-6 football team. I mean, all five of the games we won, we deserve to win, and all six that we lost, we deserve to lose.
Yep.
There aren't any bad ref calls. There aren't any particularly unlucky bounces. I mean, the fumbles, hey, we fumbled those balls legitimately. You know, those came back to bite us. On the whole, we've done great with protecting the football. It's just that the times that we haven't done it, it has been at the most inopportune time. So, I mean, I'm not trying to suggest that any of the six teams that beat us didn't really deserve to win. Every one of them legitimately deserved to win. But we're so close to being a good football team. And it just, you know, you think back to going 6-5 in 1979, and then boom, 12-0 in 1980. And you think about going 5-6 in 1996, and then boom, 10-2 in 1997. And while I don't think we're going to go win a national title next year, I do think that we have a very good shot at winning the Eastern Division next year. I very much expect us to be playing in a January 1st bowl game next year. I mean, I think this team is just a half step off. You know, we've never been bad. I mean, you look at where we are in the SEC standings in any category, we're fourth, fifth, or sixth in everything. We're not first at anything. We're not last at anything either. You know, we're just this close. And when you get the right guy plugging that right hole, you know, when you get the one or two position players that you need in there, you get a little bit more experience with this defense. You get Aaron Murray with a little bit more experience under his belt. I mean, you think Aaron Murray is going to be more nervous or less nervous against Florida, having been through that? You think he's going to play harder or less hard against Auburn after what Nick Fairley tried to do to him? You think he's going to get better or he's going to get worse? I think Aaron Murray is going to leave Athens, Georgia, as a guy that we hold up at least on a par with David Green, certainly above Matthew Stafford, maybe even up there in DJ Shockley, Buck Ballew territory. And I just, you know, the potential that is out there, as bad as this season has been, you know, I suffered through the Goff years and suffered through the Donning years, and I got the payoff for that. I think those of us who stuck it out through these three or four bad years are going to get the payoff, and I think it's going to be sooner rather than later.
Man, you know what? I'm fired up now. I can't even ask any more questions. I seriously can't. I feel good. You have not only allowed me to vent my frustration, you have allowed me to feel better about this football team going into next year. Kyle, you are my own personal therapist, man. You are my football Jesus. You know?
Well, I appreciate that, and then let me take this moment to offer you a favor. Let me say the word allegedly, and if you could go back and stick the word allegedly in about 12 of the sentences I uttered prior to this point, I would really, really appreciate it.
I will try to work allegedly in, but you know what? At the same time, no, they did it. I don't care. I know you got the lawyer thing going. You know, I'm not all about due process. So,
fortunately, truth is an absolute defense. So, if they can prove I'm wrong, well, okay.
All right. Well, Kyle, I've got to get this thing cut and get it on the internet as soon as possible, because this has been, to me, the best conversation that you and I've had, and we've had some good ones so far. Thank you so much for coming back again this week and venting with us, and enjoy the off week. We'll talk again next week and hopefully talk about how much we hate Georgia Tech.
Sounds good.
All right, man. Go Dogs.
Go Dogs. Work it, make it, do it, makes us harder, better, faster, stronger. That don't kill me, can only make me stronger. I need you to hurry up now, 'cause I can't wait much longer. I know I got to be right now, 'cause I can't get much stronger. Man, I've been waiting all night now, that's how long I've been on ya.
Snap to Stafford looks. Set up the screen, and Lumpkin with the screen over to the far sideline. Lumpkin for the score.
Let's get lost tonight. You could be my black Kate Moss tonight. Play secretary on the ball tonight. And you don't give a fuck what they all say, right? Awesome, the Christian and Christian Dior. Damn, they don't make them like this anymore. I ask, 'cause I'm not sure. Do anybody make real shit anymore? Bow in the presence of greatness. 'Cause right now, that has forsaken us. You should be honored by my lateness, that I would even show up to this fake shit. So go ahead, go nuts, go ape shit. Especially in my pastel on my bass shit. Act like you can't tell who made this new gospel, homie. Take six and take this, haters. That
don't kill me. Shockey backs up again. He's still on the shotgun. Takes it and drops back and looks. And he's going to know he's got a man wide open. Cut down in the right corner. Sean Bailey again. This time in the other corner.
That's how long I've been on ya. I need you right now. I don't know if you get a man in that. If you make plans in that. God put me in your plans and that. I'm tripping, this drink got me saying a lot. But I know that God put you in front of me. So how the hell could you front on me? It's a thousand yous, it's only one of me. I'm tripping, I'm caught up in the moment, right? 'Cause it's Louis Vuitton dine night. So we gon' do everything the kind like. Heard they do anything for a Klondike. Well, I'll do anything for a Blondike. And she'll do anything for the limelight. And we'll do anything when the time's right. Baby, you're making it. That don't kill me, can only make me stronger. I need you to hurry up now, 'cause I can't wait much longer. I know I got to be right now, 'cause I can't get much stronger. Man, I've been waiting all night now, that's how long I've been on ya. I need you right now. I need you right now. You know how long I've been on ya. Since Prince was on Apollonia. Since OJ had isotoners. Don't act like I never told ya.
Roll to go. Auburn's linebackers are moving. And we go to Lumpkin. Running up the middle and touchdown, Lumpkin. We shot Lumpkin right up the middle. We spread the field pretty good and they spread with us. And we shot Lumpkin right up the middle. And the Dogs have drawn first blood.
Can't wait much longer. I know I got to be right now.
cause I can't get much longer. Man, I've been waiting all night now. That's how long I've been on ya. Been on ya, two princes on Apollonia, since OJ had isotoners, don't act like I never told ya, you know how long I've been on ya, since princes on Apollonia, since OJ had isotoners, don't act like I never told ya.
Stafford looking it over again at a 5-3 set, and so he's going to hand it off to College Brown, 5-10, 15, he's down there, touchdown!
Leslie Brown is back. Boy, that was a strong run.
Yeah,
off the left tackle there. He looked very solid.
Thomas Brown has been out for a long year with that major injury and surgery. And he scored the first time he got his hands on that thing.